Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon. Anyone for tennis? Anyone for golf? Anyone for a bit of GAA training, camogie training? It's great, isn't it? The return. We're inching back towards normality. When are we going to be able to leave our counties? That's the big question. Or is it? Does anybody care? Well, if they're going to be opening up hotels and all around the country, they'll need more than the people in that county to come and stay in them. And I see all those attractions are open today. The zoo is the big one, of course. Paul O'Congula does a list of the ones that are open at page 3 of The Independent. I see the Irish National Stud is open today. Tato Park in Meath, Airfield up there in Dundrum, Bunratty Folk Park, Belvedere House, West Meath, Malahide Castle, Castletown House in Kildare, Borough Castle, Offaly, all open. But of course, unless you're within a 20-kilometre radius or in the county, not strictly speaking, the restrictions are there, you can't travel to them. But anyway, it's great. We're sort of, as I say, inching towards a return to the before time, as Marion Keyes calls it. I got a chance to meet her on Saturday night as part of the Court International Literary Festival. I had my letter, got in the car, travelled down to Galway to the Town Hall Theatre and spent an hour in her company on the stage. It was an odd, weird experience because it was an empty theatre, just the people at the back running the cameras and the lights. And then there was Marion and I on a big stage separated by 2 kilometres and a number of houseplants. And anyway, it was a lovely chat. She's a really interesting woman. She's very funny. She's very thoughtful. She's very smart. Great company. Amazing company. And it's up there on the RT website if you want to watch it back, or you can spool through it. But it went out live on YouTube on Saturday night. It was just an odd thing. Because you're there and there's none of the usual things that get you going, like a live audience or somebody poking you and going, make sure you say that. So it was all very relaxed. And suddenly there was a man up the back. Donal was his name. And he told me, I'm going to count from 5, 4, 3. Then I won't say anything after 3. And you have to count 2, 1 in your head. And then we're live. And you have to start talking then. So we were just chatting away. Next thing, from the back of the theatre, you hear Donal go, 5, 4, 3. And then in my head, you know, when you're trying to dance, I'm going, 2, 1. Hello, good evening. And it was funny. Anyway, it's there. And it was great. And she's a very, very interesting woman. She has done the narration on the audiobook of her most recent novel, Grown Ups. And this is the first time she has narrated a novel. And there is 17 hours and 3 minutes of that audiobook, and she does a brilliant job on it. A funny thing happened actually on Saturday, because I was rushing around, you know, trying to get organised for the whole thing, and I went out to get into the shops before the rush. Not that there's much of a rush these days. Anyway, I was leaving, and we get the paper delivered. See, get the paper delivered, and I was on the step, so I knew Jenny was still up in bed, so I said, that'd be a nice, thoughtful husband that I am. And I called back into Tom, and I said, Tom, come here, and I said, will you bring that up to your mother? Knowing that she likes to read the paper in bed, as a lot of people do on a Saturday morning. So did that, thinking, you know, I had a lovely glow around. You know, wasn't that a nice little thing to do? You know, it's the little things. That's what they say all the time. It's the little things, not the big gestures, the little gestures. The cup of tea in the morning, the paper up, all that sort of thing. So I went off about my business, you know, various things, and I'm back about an hour and a half later. And little did I know the consternation I had caused by that, what I thought was an act of kindness. Because on delivering the paper up to the bedroom, Tom suspected that it might smell a fox. And then he said, Mammy, I think this smells a fox. And then Jenny said, it does. Now, I don't know if you've ever smelt fox pee up close and personal, but it's pungent and it's repulsive and it's nauseating and it's not nice. So Jenny jumps out of the bed in her knickers, grabs the paper from Tom, runs down, throws it outside again. And then eventually she went. But anyway, that was the way she got up out of bed. So that happens sometimes. You're trying to do something nice and it backfires. I'm sure that happens all the time. That was that. On foxes, we spoke to Charles. He doesn't like being called Charles. It's Charlie Mackesy, The man who wrote The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse. And the reason we spoke to him was because, firstly, it's a brilliant book, and secondly, because sales of the book have topped 100,000 in Ireland. It has sold 1.4 million around the world. It's, he described it as a graphic novel, but it's more like a self-help book with lovely, beautiful drawings, watercolours. And we spoke to him, and it's up there if you didn't hear it, because I know a lot of people are fans of his, both from the book and from his Instagram page, and it's up there on the podcast if you want to listen back. So that's Charlie McAsee. The other animal stuff that's going on, somebody spotted this. Beautiful weekend, of course. People were out and about. Sue Kirk was out in Phoenix Park, and she spotted a rabbit on a leash. Now, there was a person, obviously, at the end of the leash. Rabbit on one end, person on the other. And she didn't think that people would believe her. So she took a picture, and there it is, white rabbit, red leash, person out of shot. But it's there. And then, in case you think it's an isolated incident of a rabbit on a leash, you can hop off it yourself. It's not. Because someone replied to Sue saying they saw a different rabbit, because this was a brown rabbit, in the Ivy Gardens in Dublin. And someone else said that this was something they also saw in Churchtown in Dublin. Another person got in touch saying they put their rabbit on a leash also, saying it was no biggie. That's a word my dad used to use all the time. It's not a biggie, not a biggie. So we'd love to hear if you've spotted rabbits or cats or any sort of odd animals on leashes. Even foxes. Wasn't there a man going around with a ferret on a leash? Yeah. I suppose people are doing different things because of the lockdown. And the rabbit needs exercise as well. So if you're going out for a walk, why not bring the rabbit on a leash? This will brighten up your day. It's posted on Kildare Weather. And they spotted one of those guys who directs traffic at the drive-through in McDonald's. And this was in Maynooth on Saturday, we think. Anyway, a lot of them, they do their job and they do it well. And they're there, and when there's a gap in the queue, they wave you on. This guy is just full of the joys of spring. I don't know if he has headphones on because it's a long enough shot, but there's a video of him directing people, but he does a little dance beforehand. And then when he's waving them on, it's like he's an international cricket bowler. He just does the whole, the windmill with the hand and boom, boom. There's loads of drama, loads of entertainment in that. That'll brighten up your day. That will brighten up your day. We watched Stowaway last night. Anna Kendrick and Toni Collette. It's about a trip to Mars. I think somebody obviously built a set that looks like a spaceship that'll go to Mars. And now they're all using it. I think that's it. Is that the way it works? Anyway, this particular one has Anna Kendrick and Toni Collette. And we watched it. And I don't know if it was worth missing Reeling in the Ears live. Not that it is live, but you know what I mean. Watching it with the rest of the country. I don't know. It was okay in parts. Disappointing at the end. I'd love to know what you think about it. Anyway, still on Mars. I see that Ingenuity, the helicopter up on Mars, has taken another flight over the weekend. Yesterday, it rose to a height of 5 metres before speeding off laterally for 50 metres in a flight that lasted 80 seconds. Now, if you were to see this in the Phoenix Park or whichever park you're frequenting of a Saturday afternoon, you wouldn't even bat an eyelid. You probably wouldn't even stop to look at it. But the fact that it's on Mars, all those thousands, millions of miles away, and the fact that somebody in NASA is telling this to do what it's doing, that's the mind-blowing bit of it. And it is mind-blowing. It's completely mind-blowing. And if they can do that now, what would they be able to do in a few years' time? 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Saw a lady with a ferret on a leash coming out of Glasnevin Cemetery, says Tony in Dublin. Kitten on a leash, saw it in Tullow last Saturday. No biggie. Will that be our phrase for today? No biggie. In the memory of Ray Darcy Sr. No biggie. That's no biggie. I passed the Helix going to and coming from work. It's just great to see people going in to get their vaccination. I just want to share the joy. Says Rosie in Santry. I met Bernie the other day, and I meet Bernie a lot when I'm running in the morning, and we wave at each other and we stop and sometimes we have a chat. She was waiting for her second vaccination. She got it last week, and she actually grew about 3 inches because waiting for the vaccination and the fear surrounding COVID-19 has been weighing down on people, so much so that they actually got smaller. And you can see people now have grown in stature. Their chests are out and they're walking with confidence because that fear is gone, and that's brilliant to see. And it's, again, inching towards a normality, inching back to normality, inching back to a time when we don't have to worry about it anymore. But we need to take it in small baby steps, not go too fast, because, you know, mad things are happening around the world, as you heard in the news there in India. And Chile got cocky as well. When they were vaccinating here, there and everywhere, and they got cocky and they opened up things, and then now they're back into a fourth wave of the pandemic. So we need to be careful. Why do people assume the human is taking the rabbit for a walk? It could easily be the other way around. You see, I love that. There's a woman in Delvin, County Westmeath, with two baby pet lambs on two leashes. So cute, says Joan. Did you ever of a day ponder how would you get a large, well, they're all large, but an adult dead stuffed giraffe out of a building? Did you ever ponder that of a day? Well, we have the answer on the programme and answers to other questions as well. Good afternoon. 5 on 551. RayRT.ie. We watched Stowaway. By the end of it, we thought the best ending should have been that they were all vaporised. What a waste of time, says Catherine. And myself, my wife Sarah, and the two children saw the rabbit on the lead in Phoenix Park yesterday. Jack and Noah were so excited to see the rabbit, says Pat. There's a girl who brings a ferret for a walk on a lead in Marley Park every weekend. Very early in the morning. I think I've spotted that lady, maybe of a Sunday. She probably does it later on a Sunday. Adrian Doyle, chairman of the Irish National Heritage Park in Wexford, down in Ferry Carrick there, has been on. It's open today. A mention would be much appreciated. We spent a brilliant day down there years ago. They've all the old dwellings like they would have been back in the day. And you can cook, I can't remember the name of the thing now, but you put water and hot stones into it and you cook the meat. Somebody will remind me what the name of it is. So that's the Irish National Heritage Park. I hear you on the fox smell. My dog rolled in fox's poo and oh my God, the smell. I washed her 6 times and the smell was still there. The next time she did it, I rubbed her all over with tomato ketchup and then washed her smell and it was gone. Sorry, I washed her and then the smell was gone instantly. Amazing result. It's interesting you say that. Remember, I was on holidays in Boston years ago, and they have skunks over there. And the only way to get rid of skunk smell, they say, is to bathe yourself in tomato juice. That works. I don't know if somebody can explain that to me, why that works. So obviously there's some relationship there between smells and tomato ketchup and how it works. So 51551, if you can sort that out. Now, our quiz of today. Yes. Today, the 26th of April. And we've cobbled together 10 questions on things that happened on this day over the years. And we're looking for two people to come on and answer 5 questions each. Our prize this week comes from the Flynn Hotel Collection. Treat the family this summer to an exciting escape on the stunning west coast of Ireland. The award-winning Old Ground Hotel in the heart of Ennis is located on the doorstep to the Cliffs of Moher and the Wild Atlantic Way, making it an ideal hideaway for exploring this beautiful part of the world. The prize includes a 2-night break at the Old Ground Hotel, staying in a stylish bedroom with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening of your choice in the Brendan O'Regan restaurant. And you can visit the oldgroundhotelennis.com, which is one of the Flynn Hotel Collection. That's a great prize there. If you want to be in with a chance of winning it, get involved in our quiz. And here's our qualifying question. In which Irish county would you find the town of Navan? In which Irish county would you find the town of Navan? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. We could be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So, how do you move a dead stuffed giraffe out of a building when the doorway is too small? Well, that's exactly what the people in the Natural History Museum had to do over the weekend. And keeper from the Natural History Museum, Nigel Monaghan, is on the line to tell us how it's done. How are you doing, Nigel?
I'm great, Ray.
Good to talk to you.
And you too.
Busy man and busy team.
We are. Museums generally have shut down like everybody else. But one of the things we have to do is to look after the collections that are tucked away behind the scenes, whether the public can get to see them or not. And it would have been great crack, actually, for a lot of the public to see what we were doing last week. Yeah. because it's not every day you sling a giraffe in some cables and hang it from a crane and then take it away in a truck.
Brilliant. So firstly, you have to do it because you're renovating the Natural History Museum. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, basically, we're at the stage now that we're working towards complete conservation of the roof structure.
Right.
And if you want to take the roof off your house, you're going to get an awful draft and rain and everything coming in. So part of the plan is to put scaffolding through the interior and build a platform for the workers to work on. And in order to put scaffolding in, we have to put the legs of the scaffolding standing on something, and they need to stand on the floor where a lot of the big animals were in the way.
Yes.
And so the first thing we have to do before the builders start coming back and doing construction in the next few weeks is to get some of our stuff out of their way.
Okay.
So last week, we've been doing this for a while. We took down some whale skeletons last year. People may have heard and seen about that on RT News and other places. But last week, we needed to get the rhinos and the giraffe and a zebra and a couple of antelopes out of the way. So we went to the first floor where all these things are. So you're 5 meters up on the first floor level. And the old doorways in the building that these things would have gone out have changed in over 100 years. So we don't have the same routes to get stuff in and out. And we opened a window on the first floor level, sort of took out some of the brickwork around it to make it a bigger hole. So we've got a sort of a smallish barn door 5 meters up in the air and a scaffolding platform outside that we were rolling large things and swinging things onto and then off with a crane and getting them down to ground level and into a truck last week.
So the giraffe is how tall?
This particular giraffe, it's only a teenage boy giraffe, so it's only 4 meters tall.
Right.
if you want to, you know, keep feeding them forever, and if they grow long and well, they'll end up at 6 meters. So some of the tallest ones you'd see in Irish zoos would be that sort of height. It's the same species that you'd see in Fota or Belfast Zoo or Dublin Zoo, the Rothschild giraffe, which is probably one of the most endangered of the large mammals in Africa. There's only about 700 or less in the 1,700 in the wild,
right,
and declining every year.
And unlike a lot of the animals, this particular giraffe has a name.
This one is one that got named. We have 10,000 exhibits in the museum, and they may have names in particular families, but nobody's told us. But we actually set out to name this. We got this giraffe, Spoticus, in 2003, and he wouldn't fit in the door very easily. At least I wasn't sure if he'd get in or out the door. So he was brought in 3 sections and assembled in situ in 2003. And we had a competition to name him. And we got quite a lot of entries, as you can imagine. I'm sure you know what it's like.
Yes.
And you get a lot of Mickey Mouse and a whole pile of other stuff. but we got this great name, Spoticus. And fortunately, there was only one entry that said that. So it was
the winner. That was the winner. I was going to ask you, how did you get it in? But it is like when you bring, you know, a flat pack sofa or whatever in and you build it. And
it
then
can be fun.
Then it's time to move it out of the room. And you're going, how do we ever get this thing in here? You know,
well, that's why they make it in flat pack nowadays, so that you can get it in the first place.
So did you record this on video? Because it must have been spectacular.
It's certainly one of the crazier things we've done, although we took some whale skulls out through the same hole and a walrus, and some of that will be in a documentary in due course.
Ah, great, great.
Coming to a channel near you somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And but that'll be a good few months away. But yeah, I mean, we've been recording this for posterity and for a little bit of craziness, and if you watch us on social media, look for Dead Zoo Diary.
Right.
You'll see the things we get up to.
Okay.
It's been fairly quiet recently, apart from this particular move.
And where is Spoticus now, Nigel?
Spoticus is in the dark, lying down, and is at about minus 30 Celsius in a shipping container freezer. And the reason that he is, and so are several other stuffed animals, is we've got a problem with moths in this old building, in the old museum building. And if we want to make sure we don't bring those to our stores and they don't munch away at the taxidermy, we freeze everything. So you know that, you know, your little hungry caterpillars, 99% water. Well, so are baby moth larvae that are eating our taxidermy.
Mm.
So when you freeze them, they bang, and that's the end of that.
Oh, because so they expand, do they?
They turn into icicles.
Yes.
And they don't come back.
All right. So that's the extermination of the moths is done at minus 30 degrees. That's how you do it. Wow.
So we put them in a shipping container freezer, switch the switches on, get out quickly before you get chilly yourself. And it takes about a week to go through that cycle of getting really cold all the way through everything, spending a couple of days at minus 30 and then slowly warming up before they go into storage.
Right. How long will it take you to fix the roof?
It'll start late this year and take about a year. It's a big roof.
Yeah.
And every sheet of glass has to come out. Every piece of lead has to come off. Every slate has to come down and then all be put back in, you know, with fresh materials. And
it's a big job.
It's part of a major
conservation
project for the Office of Public Works.
We miss the Dead Zoo.
We all do.
Yeah, we all.
We miss you, believe it or not, all of you guys.
Yeah.
We get 400,000 people coming a year, jumping up and down, chattering and having a great time. And we love that noise.
Yeah.
You know, I'm rather sick of, you know, noises of carpentry and squeaking cranes and reversing trucks.
It's a constant sort of discovery when you go in there. You always find something that you haven't seen before.
I think that's the point. I mean, even the people who work there, you know, we've actually had to move an awful lot of stuff over the last few years for various reasons. And it means you have to look in every single cupboard and go around every corner. And even we are surprised by what we have. But when you've got 10,000 exhibits and you might spend 3/4 of an hour in there with the kids, somebody spots something new every time. So that and that's what we want to do with the long-term plan for the building. As always, it's sort of a stately home of death. It's a conservation exercise. You want it to have that same flavor and feel, and you don't want the dust and you don't want the moss and you don't want the leaky roof, but you want the sense of going in there and walking around the corner and you being able to go in and say, kids, my granddad showed me this when I was
here,
when I was your
age.
That nostalgia is a huge part.
That will be a lie, but I'll use the line anyway.
There's a lot of very knowledgeable fathers that are too knowledgeable for their own good in our museum.
Are they right?
Telling people all sorts of nonsense.
Do they? So when can we get? When you're going to open? Are you going to sort of block off the first floor and the so people can still go in at the ground floor level?
Yes, the ground floor level currently has props that are holding up scaffolding. So we have to finish our current scaffolding cycle, and then we'll be able to take everything out and return the ground floor to public use.
And when will that be? Sometime in the summer, great.
Sometime in the summer. I'm not going to predict the future.
Okay.
I don't think anybody in Ireland would want to be doing that.
No, and people are trying all the time, Nigel, as it happens. Listen, do you know anything about a couple of things? Rabbits on leashes or the smell of foxes or how to cure the smell of a fox with tomato ketchup? Do you know anything about any of that stuff? No.
I do know about how to have a shower in tomato ketchup. If you've been dismantling a whale on a beach and you get covered in whale goo, not that I've actually done that, but I have friends, well, distant friends, not very close anymore, who've done that because they smell pretty bad after they've been doing that. But basically, tomato ketchup does actually have enzymes that help to break down greasy, nasty smells. Most smell molecules are big and complicated, so if you can break them down a bit using something, they actually stop smelling. And that's the basis of a lot of deodorants. But basically, yes, do have a shower in tomato ketchup if you've got dead animal squirt all over you.
Hey, Nigel Monaghan, you're an encyclopedic. That's brilliant information. Encyclopedic knowledge of all things animals. Thanks so much for talking to us about the large giraffe and the window and the Natural History Museum. Thanks, Nigel.
Anytime, Ray.
Mind yourself. Bye.
You too.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, today marks 35 years since the world's worst nuclear disaster, Chernobyl. Chernobyl Children International CCI are the sole organisation working in the Chernobyl area to be accredited with United Nations official NGO status, and founder and CEO of CCI, Eddie Roach, joins me now. How are you doing, Adie?
Good afternoon, Ray.
I was getting my stuff
to talk to you.
I was getting my stuff together there. That's why I stumbled over that word. What
Not
I have in
all.
Front of me is the front page of the Irish Independent from this day, 35 years ago. They've reprinted it there on their independent.ie.
Oh, really?
Yes. It says, "Big toll feared in nuclear disaster." That's the headline there.
Yeah.
Little did we know that there will be echoes of that disaster still affecting us today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting, Ray. I'll take a little look at that afterwards. I suppose, you know, on reflection, because kind of that's what today really is all about. Like, it's, you know, 35 years on that, I suppose it's the catastrophic ramifications of what happened 35 years ago and how it continues to shadow into the lives of millions of people. And, you know, it's that impact which isn't just we'll say, about the radioactivity, but it's also the impact socially, economically, ecologically, and medically, of course, as well, because all of those things are bound up together, if you like. And I suppose, Ray, it's very hard to tell, to keep telling a story that is that old, because in a way, for some people, it's like reading about history and saying, well, isn't that all over? That was then, and thank God this is now. But unfortunately, it's the long-term impact of that tragedy, I suppose, that has left a radioactive footprint even on humanity. And we can't undo that. And like, that's the thing, it's in the genetics. As a pediatrician said to me over there one day, she said, but you cannot undo our genetics. It is there. So in a sense, what we have to do is to adjust and adapt kind of around that. And that's kind of what we have been doing, you know, despite the pandemic, we've been managing to kind of keep it going.
We'll talk about the pandemic in a moment, but just, can you bring us back to when you first heard about it and how it affected you, 35 years ago?
Sure, I can actually remember where I was, Ray. I was actually in a secondary school in Middleton, County Cork, and I was up on the stage, actually, and they'd had a general assembly of students, and we were talking about world issues. It was during the height of the Cold War, East and West, saber-rattling, nuclear weapons everywhere, Ireland as a neutral country trying to get disarmament. And my job was kind of trying to create the mind and the atmosphere of peace so that we would get East and West to negotiate down the weapons and work on peace. And I remember from the side of the stage, the principal of the school just walked on to the stage, stood by me at the microphone and said, it has just been announced. And that's actually how I heard. Mm. And really, Ray, what I did kind of, I kind of felt that everything I had done as an environmentalist up to that point kind of was leading all to this, because I knew the theory. I knew what had happened in Hiroshima, Nagasaki. I knew the impact of all of that. And then the sidekick development from the weapons, of course, was the energy. Mm. So I knew what lethality was there. And I remember just saying, what are we going to do if the cloud comes over Ireland? Which, of course, it did in May 1986. And we put together a group of doctors and nurses, and I was the one just kind of doing the logistics, but we put together an information hotline because people were ringing in saying, my daughter is pregnant, you know, my child is going to school, are they allowed to go outdoors, are there foods we should take or not take? And we gave practical advice to people because nothing was actually coming from the state, would you believe? And lo and behold, about 2 weeks later, and we have it from all the satellite weather maps now, and you could actually see Ireland was surrounded by the radioactive cloud in May 86, and we had really dense rainfall at that time, and that brought the radioactivity down in some quantities in different parts of Ireland. And that's the absolute truth. I mean, it travelled the globe because radiation by its nature is transboundary, so it doesn't need
Did that affect anybody in Ireland, Heidi?
Well, of course, you know something, Ray? We'll never know that.
Right.
But we do know that, we'll say, there are a certain number of hill farmers, sheep farmers, in various parts, like in Donegal and in different places, that actually were stopped from selling their meat because we discovered that their meat was contaminated. Okay. The same happened in Wales and in different parts of England, in highland areas where sheep were grazing. And that actually went on for a number of years. And I'd actually forgotten it until I thought of it this morning. So, like, who knows, Ray? Because the thing with radioactivity is you just don't know. It's indiscriminate. And the whole planet got a dusting at that time. So in a sense, what we're looking at now, 35 years on, what's the story telling us now, you know, with the 35 years of experience and the 35 years of reflection? And you know the way we've brought, like, the Chernobyl children for all of these years for
how many have you brought over?
We've brought the wonderful figure of 25,600 children.
Brilliant.
Have come to Ireland. And Ray, if I could just say the importance of those visits, because these are children who were sleeping, eating, breathing, and living in that ongoing radioactive environment, being topped up all the time by just living. And of course, the radioactivity was much more dangerous in the summertime when the soil gets dry and radioactivity could be airborne and children would be swimming in rivers and streams and things. And of course, then, you know, it can happen there as well. So partly the value of coming to Ireland can never be truly measured.
How many people died as a result of Chernobyl?
Now, Ray, that is one of the greatest disputed figures of all time. And as they say, doctors differ and patients die.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's like anything that, like, you know, how many people died from smoking cigarettes or how many people died from lead poisoning from, you know, petrol when they said lead or whatever. It's very, very hard to know. But I can tell you in the groups that we would work with, the firefighters, for example, all the men that were heroes, known as liquidators, 800,000 of them were conscripted in to try and make the reactor safe because it was about to go into a second, even bigger explosion in 1986. And about 45,000 of those men died in about the first 5 or 6 years. And people actually stopped counting after that. And so we'll actually never know, Ray. I mean, we know from thyroid cancer, for example, because that was one of the big cancers that was in epidemic proportions at the time, and lots of different cancers. And now it's more like damage to the immune system, to the heart, and, you know, like different things like that. But
Paul Cunningham did a great report on Morning Ireland this morning, and he's written a piece for RTE.ie, and one of those liquidators is interviewed by Paul because he was there on the 20th anniversary. Oleg Chikov, he was a former helicopter pilot, and he spent 6 weeks flying over Chernobyl, dumping things out on it to try and dampen the effect.
And do you know something about that man? I think he was a colonel, and he had come back from the Afghanistan war, and a lot of them were pulled back from there because these were like their best fighters and their most brave and most courageous, and they needed their kind of lead-lined helicopters as well to try and keep the radioactivity down as much as possible when they were flying over the reactor. And because he was an older man, because he was like in his 40s, he actually flew more times than others because he wanted to save as many of the young helicopter pilots as possible because he knew that they were of childbearing age.
Like, so he knew his fate. He knew his fate.
He knew. Yeah. He said that he knew. And it was that kind of self-sacrifice. And do you know something, Ray? I think a great homage was paid to those guys who self-sacrificed with the HBO series on Chernobyl. And that really, I think, kind of, you know, returned the spotlight on the real heroes of the day because they had been, you know, thrown to the side, forgotten, passed by in history or in the story of Chernobyl. Yeah. And he gave them back the honour that they deserved because they actually saved the world because the reactor was convulsing. And unless they stabilised it by tunnelling in underneath in extreme conditions, between extreme heat, there was also extreme radioactivity. And I think programmes like that have helped, I suppose, to tell the story with fresh eyes and to tell the story anew. And all of the lies and the deception that came from the Soviet Union in 1986, we have chipped away at that, Ray, for 35 years.
And there's another documentary airing tonight. Where can people see that?
Oh, listen, I'm glad you mentioned that. It is an extraordinary documentary, actually. It's on PBS America, and I hope your listeners might have it. It's called Back to Chernobyl, and I saw it last week. It is stunning because again it's all about the truth telling. It's all about the raw truth telling of real people's own personal stories. And I think that's actually like one of the greatest tributes, I suppose, we can pay to these people is to listen to their stories, because they have been made like outcasts. They have been relegated to the realms of history, and yet their story is as real today as it was then and will be in the future, because it's their children and their grandchildren who are today's victims of Chernobyl. Because we're looking at, you know, the third generation, what they call Chernobyl lineage, where it has leaned across the generations.
And like that, through the gene pool.
through the gene pool, exactly. Mad, coming back to, you know, our friend, the paediatrician over there, that said to me, she said, Adie, you cannot undo the genetics.
Right.
And of course, you know, I probably asked her, you know, an innocent question, like saying, you know, when will this be over?
Yeah.
Like, is there a beginning, middle and end? You know, and I often raise...
Well, they don't know is the answer, I suppose.
We don't know, absolutely not.
It was like what we're going through now. It was unprecedented.
Unprecedented. Yeah. And the latency period sometimes for the cancers or the diseases to emerge can be up to 60 plus years. Yeah. So we will never know, you know, because it is dependent on so many different things. And because I suppose there are still 5 million people living in these contaminated zones, of which, by the way, 1 million of them are just children, we have to look at the ramifications of that, because children, or pregnant women actually, are the most susceptible and vulnerable to exposure to radioactivity, and that is mainly now in 2021 through the food chain. And it's also through, you know, we're talking about the forest fires in Killarney, which are raging and really damaging. But can you imagine if you throw the element of radioactivity into those fires besides the dust of, you know, and the burning?
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
And in watching the brilliant HBO thing, which Sky showed, and we spoke about this before, you were a consultant on it.
Yes.
And it won all sorts of awards, BAFTAs and Emmys.
Yes.
In watching that, you know, the disinformation and the cover-up and all that sort of thing was well dramatised in it. But how did that affect you when you started to work with Chernobyl Children International?
Yeah. Do you know something, Ray? It was very difficult, except the thing is, I suppose we had a good dollop of fair innocence and, you know, we actually really
naivety.
Didn't know.
Naivety. Yeah.
Naivety, absolutely. Because, you see, the KGB were everywhere and, like, it was still the Soviet Union and everything was controlled, of course, including information. And, in fact, in the early months after the accident, the first thing that they did in Moscow was to pass secret legislation, 40 pieces of legislation, to keep the truth not only from the people, the millions of people there, but also from the rest of the world. Mm. And it's really only thanks to the Swedes, who picked it up on their sensitive monitoring equipment, that the world actually found out that there had been this massive release, which was thrown 7 kilometres into the Earth's atmosphere and carried with the winds to every corner of the earth as we know it. I mean, that was shocking. So it was very hard to work in those circumstances.
Yes.
And really, it was the bravery of Ukrainian and Belarusian doctors in 1990 who broke the silence. They sent into our office a two-liner email which said, SOS appeal, for God's sake, help us to get the children out.
Yes.
And we were saying, oh my God, like, is it really still bad over there? And that's actually how we heard that they had been silenced by the state, so that they couldn't talk about the birth defects, they couldn't talk about what was happening, health-wise, and the people that were dying, and they would be put in prison and lose their jobs if they spoke out about the real consequences of the disaster. So in a way, Ray, I would say that on the 26th of April 1986, a new word entered the history of language. It entered into the history of world disasters and entered into the history of the world. And that word was Chernobyl.
Yeah.
And that is ingrained on our minds. And it is only thanks to the generosity and the compassion of our small island, but by God, do we have a big heart, that we have changed the lives of countless people.
And saved so many lives. And just say a little bit about the cardiac surgery, the heart surgery that was needed for people.
Well, Ray, one of the first things to show the impact of radioactivity on small newborns was actually on that beautiful organ, the heart. And Ukrainian doctors first discovered it, and they actually called it Chernobyl heart.
Nice.
And that's what we refer to it as now. Thousands of children being born with this condition. And of course, there's no way that you can live with this condition. You would die with this condition without intervention. And of course, thousands of them did die. And out of that story from the surgeons, we actually created a cardiac program where surgeons sponsored by the people of Ireland who are from all over the world fly into the stricken region of Ukraine and perform life-saving surgeries. And they literally perform miracles every time they do a surgery. It's like a miracle for the families and, of course, for the child. Yeah. And
it's life-saving. You know, it's life-saving.
It's actually life-saving. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, Ray, we had actually planned a cardiac surgeon to mark the 35th anniversary, and the guys were, the surgeons and the cardiac nurses were all flying in, we'll say, last week. But because of the levels of COVID in Ukraine and they escalated so high, we actually had to cancel it. So, you know, we're very much, as we'd say in Irish, Éireann Imill with this. But while the world has kind of pressed pause because of the pandemic, we have still managed, despite everything we're going through, we've managed to keep all of the programs running.
Great.
And that is the most important
thing. What about you? Because you'd be regularly over there. And when was the last time you were in or around Chernobyl?
Well, we were there in February, 12 months. I mean, unfortunately, none of us have been back since. Little did we know then, Ray, you know, we all thought after the first lockdown that things might be returning to normal, and here we are another 12 months later. Yeah. But, you know, I'm a glass half full rather than a half empty optimist. And sometimes, you know, we have to dig deep for the optimism, and we have to dig deep as well for the hope, because our organisation is built on hope, yeah, and it is built on love, and it is built on the bedrock of our volunteers all around the country. Thousands of people over 35 years have opened their homes, opened their hearts, taken in these children. They have done fundraisers for us. They've sent convoys of aid. We've sent flights of aid. We've sent teams of nurses and doctors and painters and tilers and electricians. And they have all done stunning work.
Yeah.
And in a sense today, Ray, you know, I know while we're commemorating the sadness and the catastrophe itself, but there's also a little bit of uplift in here, because we decided, you know, today we won't talk about all of the sadness and all of the darkness, because what we're trying to do is to kindle the light and to say to the people there that they are not alone, that we are there to share the burden, even despite what we're going through ourselves. And the people of Ireland, Ray, have never been found wanting, have never wavered in their commitment. And, you know, and the message to the people, loud and clear, from our president down, is we will not forget you.
And the president started a global commemoration yesterday. With candles been lit all over the world to commemorate Chernobyl 35 years ago.
Which is extraordinary. And actually, I believe, I haven't seen it myself now because I'm not great on social media and Twitter and all that, but I believe the ORIS have just put up a little 23-minute piece of the candle lighting ceremony.
Right.
And I think that's an extraordinary symbol, particularly coming from President Higgins, you know, who's our head of state, because that sends out, you know, a global chain reaction of other voices joining together, which started with the former Prime Minister of New Zealand, Helen Clark, who's very well known in environmentalist and humanitarian, and then went on to Melbourne, of course, where we had Sonia O'Sullivan lighting the candle for us, and it went right and left, north, south, east and west, and all brought together by our president. And I think it's an extraordinary thing that a small island nation, struggling, having many challenges, you know, the aftermath of the pandemic and everything that we have yet to face, but somehow, Ray, we still have the capacity to reach beyond ourselves, to reach beyond our own troubles, and to throw out this lifeline, this message of solidarity, this message of hope for the future, and really saying the people of Ireland will never be found wanting.
And never forget Chernobyl. I think that's the important thing.
I think that's a powerful message.
They need to feel that they're being remembered.
Exactly, because, you know, a lot of things that we hear, and this will come up in the documentary tonight, Ray, that you mentioned that's going to be on PBS America, is how the people who survived, and, the, you know, they became forgotten, and they became like outcasts.
Yeah.
That nobody. It was like the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the Hubakusha.
We must find out where people can watch that, because I don't know if people have access to PBS. It might be shown on somewhere else in the near future, and we'll tell people about that. Adi Roach, founder and CEO of Chernobyl Children International. Thanks so much for talking to us. Thanks,
Thank
Adi.
You, Ray.
But
Thank
mind
you.
Yourself. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope, how are you?
How are you getting on, Ray?
Good. Pricewatch at RTE.ie if you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. Hello, I'm in a flap, Conor. I've spent the last year looking for a house to buy and getting all my ducks in a row. I have mortgage approval from KBC and now I've found they're leaving the market. I'm not ready to buy yet and probably won't be until September. Does this mean I will have to start from scratch with another bank?
Yeah, now buying a house at the best of times is very, very stressful, as many of your listeners will know. And it's particularly stressful in 2021 because there's all sorts of ducks that you have to get in a row, and banks are really, really strict about their lending practices. So you have to feel for people who have got this far along the road with a particular bank and then the bank announces that they're leaving. And just by way of context, KBC announced about 2 weeks ago that they kind of took the country by surprise and announced they were going to be quitting the Republic. At least that was their plan, to leave the Irish market. And this comes on the back of Ulster Bank announcing something similar a few weeks back. But I think the first thing I'd say to this listener is don't panic, because sometimes... And I would hold my hand up and say I'm kind of to blame for this, as is RTE, as is the Irish Independent. You know, the headlines will say KBC set to leave Irish market. But these things tend to happen quite slowly. And a bank doesn't exit the market overnight, or even over the course of 3 months or 6 months or 12 months or whatever it might be. And the reality is that I was just on, 2 minutes ago, when I was listening to Adi Roach, I was just on the KBC website, and they're still looking for new business for mortgage applications. So they're not leaving the market tomorrow.
Is that just that they haven't changed their website, or they still are looking for business?
No, not at all. No, not at all. Because you must remember, first off, it's not a done deal. What they've done is they've signed a memorandum of understanding with Bank of Ireland, and Bank of Ireland would buy its good loan book, and then, you know, somebody else might buy its deposit book or whatever it might be. But there's no deal being done, so they're not leaving yet. So that's the first thing. The second thing to remember is if you have mortgage approval from KBC, and that lasts for, let's say, 6 months, and if in 5 months you find a house, you draw down the mortgage, you buy the house, no matter who owns the loan in 5 years' time or in 2 years' time or in 10 years' time, exactly the same terms and conditions that you agreed with KBC will apply. So let's say if you take one of their long-term fixed rate mortgage deals, which are 3%, 2.5 to 3% over a 10-year period, it doesn't matter... It doesn't make any difference who owns that loan in 2 years' time. And in fact, in some ways, we get kind of suckered into believing all the there's a huge difference between the banks. The reality is you have a legal contract in place and that contract has to be honoured. It doesn't matter who owns the loan. So that's the next thing I'd say to somebody, that A, it's not going to happen overnight. B, get the loan, buy the house, and no matter what happens, your loan will be secured.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter who owns it in the end.
And now, are there fixed rates competitive at the moment?
They're very competitive, you see, and that's one of the distressing things in the longer term, because I think in 2008 there was 12 fully functioning banks. I say fully functioning, but you and I know that might be a bit of a generous way of describing what they were doing. But there was 12 banks operating in the Republic of Ireland. At the start of this year, there was 5 banks operating in the Republic of Ireland.
Right.
And once KBC and Ulster Bank exit, there will be 3. Now, I'm talking about fully functioning banks, because, of course, there's other players who are coming into the market as well all the time.
So Revolut, for example.
I think we talked on the show about Avant Money. And then you have the fintech companies like N26 and Revolut. Now, they don't offer mortgages, but there are other mortgage providers who aren't retail banks who are offering mortgages. But the bottom line is that it diminishes competition in this country, so it's a bad thing. And already, people in Ireland were paying substantially more than our European cousins for our mortgages. So there's little chance that there will be any kind of downward pressure. But in terms of this very specific
why
instance,
does that continue? Why does that continue, Conor? Why does that continue that we were paying
the higher rates?
Yes.
Well, listen, the banks will say that because there's more stringent rules in place in Ireland in terms of how much money they have to have to hand, and because of all the financial prudence measures that had to be put in place in Ireland as a result of the collapse, banks simply don't make as much cash in this country as they could make in a bigger country where the rules are more relaxed. So that's what they'll say.
Okay. And that's why I ask you a question as a journalist who works in this area?
Of course.
Comparatively speaking, do Irish banks make more profit than European banks?
I can tell you that they make between 6 and 9% profit on some of their financial dealings, and that's quite substantial. So it's not like we should be feeling sorry for them. But the reality is they were all really badly burned. And there's two other issues I think probably should be highlighted. One issue is the tracker mortgage business, which is losing the bank's money. And the second thing is it's very difficult, and I personally believe this is a good thing, it's very difficult to dispossess someone of their family home, which means that there isn't that jeopardy. Like, there are certain countries in the world where if you haven't paid your mortgage for 2 months or 3 months, you're out on your ear. Mm. I would hate to think that we would get to that situation.
Okay.
But that does make it more difficult for banks to operate. But I wouldn't be overly sympathetic to them.
Okay, so this person, go ahead with the approval from KBC, buy the house.
Go ahead, take out the loan, you'll be grand.
You'll be grand. Okay, pricewatch@rte.ie if you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. Conor, we'll talk to you next week. Well, maybe not next week because it's a bank holiday. We may talk to you on Tuesday. Mind yourself, Conor. Thank you. Anish Toshin and the Free Skelton and Oak to La Marini Hulawan. Good Marion, thanks very much. 515-51@rte.ie. Ashling has been on to say that PBS America is on Sky Channel 174. So that documentary on Chernobyl is on at 7:30 tonight. So if you have Sky, it's channel 174. Thanks so much for that, Aisling. And it's a Fulloch Fia. That's the thing I was talking about down in the Irish National Heritage Park in Ferrycarrick in Wexford. Heated stones are used to keep the water boiling, and you cook the meat in that. That's Pat Lacey in Wexford. Thanks, Pat. And ketchup also takes colour staining off your hair from chlorine, etc. That's Elaine in Dundrum. And I'm a hairdresser, of course. Ha ha. Now, I don't know if that means she is or she isn't. My cat follows me and my dog when we go for a walk in the evening. She'll only walk around the local block, hopping in and out of gardens, coming out onto the footpath occasionally to obviously keep an eye on us. But she effectively follows us each time, although I haven't resorted to putting her on a lead yet. That's Paul. And Thomas says, listen here in Harwich in Massachusetts, or it could be Harwich, my old dog Blue was sprayed by skunks on several occasions a few years back. I got him in the garden and covered him in tomato products, ketchup, pasta sauces, tinned tomatoes, anything we had with tomatoes in the house. Lathered them in them and hosed them off. The smell had dissipated but did not go away fully. He was banished to the garage for several nights until the smell went away. Unfortunately for us, he didn't learn from this and was skunked many more times, with the same results. Skunked, that's a great word. That's from Thomas. And Paul wants to know the name of the song we started the show with. It's C-MAT. That's the letter C, M-A-T, capital C, capital M. And the name of the song is I Don't Really Care For You. And she's brilliant. And that's her current offering, as they say in the music business. Now, it's time for our quiz of today. Today being the 26th of April. 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. And a prize! Prize comes from the Flynn Hotel Collection. You can treat the family this summer to an exciting escape on the stunning west coast of Ireland at the award-winning Old Ground Hotel in the heart of Ennis. Close to the cliffs of Moher, the Wild Atlantic Way, making it an ideal hideaway for exploring this beautiful part of Ireland, and indeed the world. Old Ground Hotel Ennis for more details. oldgroundhotelennis.com for more details. Valerie Curtis is in Dunleary in Dublin. How are you doing, Valerie?
Hi, how are you?
Is the sun shining out there?
Oh, it's glorious.
Is it?
It is.
It's a nice part of the world to be when the sun shines.
Absolutely, paradise.
Which pier do you walk on?
I don't, I do. I walk from Cliney down to, in the morning, but I'll go from Cliney down to Sorrento.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
beautiful, yeah.
Do you not get a bit jealous looking at all those big houses?
Yes, I'm waiting for the lotto. And I've ticked mine out.
Have you? Yeah. Yeah. Valerie here, I've just won the lot. I want to buy your house. Thanks very much.
That's what I'm going to do.
Do you ever see Bono at all?
No. Never.
I remember I used to cycle up Fichel Road there back in the day, and during the summer there would always be a collection of Spanish students waiting to see if they could, get a glimpse of him. Yeah, outside the house.
I don't think he's really there much, like.
I'd say he's there now in lockdown. I'd say.
I'm sure I'm going to go up now.
Valerie here, Bon. I want to buy your house. Just won the lotto. What are you up to today, Valerie?
I was just out doing my mum's garden.
Right.
Yeah, cutting the grass. That's really it. Weeding and...
And it's by way of a promise to your dad.
Yes. Yes, he was a great gardener. And when he passed there 4 years ago, I promised him, I said, look, I'll always look after your garden.
Right.
So I do.
Isn't that lovely? Because it genuinely then is a labour of love for you.
Yeah, yeah. And when I do the garden, a little robin always comes down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the spirit of your dad.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Sometimes it might be a tiny little feather.
Hey, aren't they the most beautiful little birds, the robins?
Yeah, yeah. So tame-like.
Yeah, we've a couple that hang around our garden.
Yeah.
I was sitting out yesterday reading a book and there was a little bird, I don't know if it was robin, a tiny little bird, and the shrill song out of it for a tiny little bird that they can make that much noise.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That's why I always wonder why people walk and they always have their... listen to music. I always just listen to the birds. And
they say that's really good for your mental health.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not
telling. I worked out for this quiz.
Look at me and you preaching away there. Get those headphones off and listen to nature. But you should.
Absolutely.
You're up against Fergal McSherry in Castlebar in County Mayo. How are you doing, Fergal?
Hello, Ray. How are you?
You're in the back garden as well.
I am enjoying the sunshine.
Yeah, are the birds singing?
Birds are singing and the sun is shining. All is good down here.
All is good in Castlebar, yeah. And what's your story, Fergal?
I'm just off for COVID there. I'm actually guard in Dublin. But I have underlying conditions, so I've been off for the last year. So I'm just relocated to Mayo for a bit.
Okay, back to the homestead.
Back to the homestead is right, yeah.
And how have you been filling your days?
Oh, God, exercising. That's what I've been doing. That's all that's left to do is just exercise and this, that and the other.
And does today make any difference to you with the tennis and the golf and that sort of thing?
No, unfortunately not. I don't play golf, unfortunately, but never know, I might have to take it up now.
Yeah, well, you don't have to. You can do something else. So do you run or what do you do?
What do I do? Oh, yeah, I just back from a run, actually.
Right.
So,
how long did you do now?
Didn't do that far because it's scorching down here, so I only went for a 5 mile run. So
it's only 5 miles.
5 miles.
They're all shaking their heads outside. Like that's a good run. 5 miles is a good run. It is warm out there, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh God, it's scorching. Yeah.
Yeah. Boiling. Yeah. I'm envious of you now out for a sort of mid afternoon run in the sun. Okay, so how are you both on quizzes, Valerie? How are you on the quiz?
I'm okay.
You're okay, Fergal?
So-so.
So-so, right, okay.
Oh, God. My heart's pounding.
Best of luck, Valerie. Best of luck.
Right, so five questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If it's a draw, we go to a tie-break situation. Good luck, Valerie, in Dunleary. And good luck. Oh, yeah, and go, hold on. Good luck. Oh. Let me say what I have to say. And good luck to Fergal and Castlebar. Here we go. Right, now.
Thanks.
Now,
me?
Okay, Valerie.
Okay.
Now you're on. Yeah, okay. First question for you. On this day in 1920... ice hockey made its Olympic debut at the Antwerp Games. In which European country would you find Antwerp?
Belgium.
It's the correct answer. Fergal, on this day in 1966, the International Olympic Committee voted to award the city of Munich the right to host the 1972 Summer Olympic Games, a historic Olympic Games for all the wrong reasons. In which European country would you find Munich?
Germany.
Correct answer. Valerie, your second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this. I'll try again. On this day in 1981, Jim Davis, American actor who played Jock Ewing in that show, died at the age of 65. Can you name the show?
Oh, God, I can't.
Jock Ewing. Jock Ewing was his name, the character's name.
It's a Western anyway, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh.
No.
Bonanza?
No.
Okay.
Dallas.
Ah, God, Dallas.
Do you want me? No, I won't ask you what age you are. It's rude to ask a lady your age, isn't it? Anyway, so Dallas it was. Fergal.
Yes.
Have a listen to this.
Only a mudblood.
He did not.
What's a mudblood?
There's some wizards, like the Malfoy family, who think they're better than everyone else because they're what people call pure blood. More to the point, they've yet to think of a spell that our Hermione can't do.
On this day in 2009, at the 55th British Academy Television Awards, the BAFTAs, Robbie Coltrane was nominated for a Best Supporting Actor Award for his role as Hagrid in that movie. Can you name it?
Harry Potter.
Correct answer. You probably knew that, Valerie, did you?
I did.
Yeah, that's the way they fall. Now, your third question. On this day, 1949, Transjordan was officially renamed the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. What's the capital city of Jordan? Amman or Damascus?
Amman.
Is correct answer. Damascus is Syria. Fergal, for you, your third question. On this day in 2015, President Nazarbayev was re-elected president of Kazakhstan with 97.7% of the vote. Which of these is the capital city of Kazakhstan? Kabul or Nur Sultan?
Second one, Nur Sultan.
Yeah, Nur Sultan is the correct answer, yes. Okay, Valerie, four question for you. Have a listen to this. My name is Rio and she dances on the sand. Just like that river twisting through. And this day in 1960, Roger Taylor, drummer with that band, was born in Birmingham, England. Can you name the band?
Duran Duran.
Correct answer. And for you, Fergal, have a listen to this. That song was number one on this day in 1991, Fergal. Can you name the singer?
Sheer.
Yeah, Sheer, sure. You're right. Sure. So you're on four. Valerie, you're on three. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to get this right to stay with a chance of staying in the competition. If Fergal gets his final question incorrect, then we're into a tiebreak situation. Good luck with this. Melania Trump, wife of Donald Trump and former First Lady of the United States, was born on this day in Slovenia. In what year was she born? 1970, 1973, 1976?
70.
Yeah, she's 51 today, is Melania Trump. So that gives you four. Fergal's on four as well, but he does have his final question in hand. Good luck with this, Fergal. Get it right, you win the prize. Get it wrong, we're into a tiebreak situation. Here it is. On this day in 1986, actor bodybuilder Arnold Schwarzenegger married newscaster Maria Shriver. In what year was Arnold Schwarzenegger born? 1943, 1947 or 1950?
I would say 1947.
Is the correct answer? He's 73 and you got 5 out of 5. Valerie, you were up against stiff competition there in Fergal.
No worries.
Yeah, sorry about
that. I'll finally get one over Dublin. Finally.
Yeah. Well, oddly though, Valerie gets the cup. Yes. Or mug as it is. Yeah, yeah. So Valerie, we're sending you the Radar Show mug.
That's grand.
Yeah,
send me two, would you?
Okay, go on. Okay. Yeah, go on, you chancer. Lovely talking to you. Mind yourself. Good luck with the gardening.
Okay.
Bye. Fergal, well done.
Yes.
You're going to Ennis. And you're going to be staying in the Old Ground Hotel. And just to check out what's in store for you, you can go to oldgroundhotelennis.com. Well
Thank
done, Fergal.
Right.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Mind
Bye.
Yourself. Enjoy Bye. The sunshine. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
David has been on to 51551 to say that little loud bird is most likely a wren. Smallest but the loudest, says David in Limerick. And then Anne Kelly has been on. She just sent us a picture from maybe a pet shop. I'll just leave this here, she says, !! And it is a leash and a harness for a pet rat. I had a pet rat when I was at college, Pat Short. Did you know that?
No,
yes, I did. I didn't know.
I didn't expect that segue at all. You caught me totally. I was daydreaming, looking out the window, right?
Yeah, it was a Norwegian white rat, lab rat with pink eyes, and we had to train them to do all sorts of things. So I called mine Chicken the Rat. That's ridiculous. Anyway.
Yeah, they were all to go for a while. I remember a couple of guys in college were punks and they all had rats.
They had rats,
and mice and stuff, yeah. I never wanted it at all.
No, in fairness, I wouldn't have had one if I didn't have to. You know, it was part of the curriculum. Listen, Frank of Ireland, congratulations. It's brilliant.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
listen, I'm delighted to be part of the troupe, as they say.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great experience working with an amazing cast, you know. And it's a project you'd be proud to be involved with, because I think it's going to be, you know,
huge.
Huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And have you watched all 6.5 hours now?
No, I'm old school. I'm going to watch them as they're broadcast.
Are you right?
And I saw the first one and my TV froze while I was watching it. It actually froze at a really bad time.
When you were naked, was it?
Yeah, exactly. And of course I missed the last one because I fell asleep. So I'm not doing well. I'll probably end up going onto the site and looking them up. Yeah.
So for people who don't know, it's written by the two Gleesons and a guy called Michael Maloney. I don't know much about him. He went to school with the lads, did he?
Yeah, he did. Mike, the guys go back a long time, but I think first time I came across Mike was back in 2008 when they did Your Bad Self.
Oh, yes. Do you remember that
series?
It was a sort of sketch show.
Yeah, I actually to this day think it's probably one of the best sketch shows ever to come out of this country. It's so funny. A huge cast: Michael McDonald, Amy Hoobman. There's a whole raft, and they're all great writers
as well as actors.
Yeah, Donald and Gleeson. And that was the first time I came across Mike, and I met him obviously working with them, and the guys were all kind of in school together and writing together. Bouncing stuff around, so it's they're funny guys, you know.
Yeah, so I was saying on Friday that it's the funniest thing since Father Ted to come out of Ireland, and there are loads of similarities. It's the same type of comedy, and you have been in both, so you're better positioned than most people to comment. So what do you think?
I actually would agree with you in the sense, I'd have to be clear about it. They're very different. The content is very different, but yeah, it's kind of like a contemporary style of comedy that like Father Ted was at its time and its day. And it was very in your face. I mean, people looking at Father Ted now would probably get very, you know, just don't think much of it. They think it's very, very funny. But back in the day, it was very edgy. In relation to the Catholic Church and saying things and all that kind of stuff. And I think what the guys are doing now is very edgy comedy now. It's just like the characters have no filters on them and stuff like that, and they just come out with stuff. And it's genius. Like, I really do think it's fantastic writing.
And there's some amazing slapstick things. I was thinking, you know, about Mrs. Doyle and her falling out the window. And then in some of the scenes where you're directing 12 Angry Women, there's some amazing, like you're going, oops, when somebody walks into a wall or is thrown over by somebody who's an expert in martial arts, you know, you can feel the hurt, you know, you can feel the hurt. We better get this out of the way anyway, your nudity, your nakedness, Pat.
So. I'm the new J-Lo of Tipperary.
This is reference to your bum. Yes.
Yeah. And I wouldn't mind, right? This is the funniest thing. Like, I've done that twice in my career. Three times actually, and this week the two of them were on TV.
Were they?
Dark Lies the Island was on Saturday night,
right?
On RT premiered Kevin Barry's film, Ian Fitzgibbon director, Kevin Barry.
Yeah.
Fantastic cast and a great film as well. So yeah, in the one week, twice.
So how does it, what's the conversation? You know, like...
Oh, well, look, I mean, you get a script and it's in the script the director would approach her, the guys, the writers approach her, say, look, this is the scene, how are you comfortable with it and everything else? And my attitude to these things is if it's right and if it works, why not? And in this situation, it was very, very funny. Very, very funny reveal, you know, a scene. Yeah,
the reveal of your bum was very funny, is that what you're saying? Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we were doing it on set. Poor Brian Gleeson had to hug me afterwards. I think that was more disturbing for anyone. How the poor man was able to act up to me. So, yeah, that's the way it is in any film, TV series or whatever like that, you know. If it's right, it's right, and it works, it's good, and you go for it, and that's how it works.
So, the two Gleesons, Breen and Donal, and Sarah Green is in it. You're in it. Tom Vaughan Lawler.
Yes.
So it's a brilliant cast. And Pom Boyd.
Pom Boyd is there as well. She's fantastic.
She's standout in it, you know. And you're after her. Your character's after her. Is that,
thank you for...
Aren't you? That's the thing, yeah.
I don't know. I have to see the rest of it, but they're all brilliant characters, you know. I mean, they're just fantastic. And
you can see all of them on All Four. I'm looking forward to seeing Dark Lies the Island. I haven't seen it. I saw you in Pixie.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that.
It's a very good film. Yeah, yeah. I that was a very quick entrance and exit.
Yes, you played a gangster priest who met his maker very early on in the thing. But
no, it was great. It was great energy in that movie, and it was great fun doing it. We shot the scenes I was in up in Belfast. It was great crack. Yeah.
Listen, Pat, will you tell us all now? Just look, you're among friends. Is there some sort of contract that if you're making a movie or a TV program in Ireland, you have to have Pat Short in it? Is that the way it goes?
No, I can assure you, there's plenty of films being made in the country without me. I'm disgusted at the thought of it, but it's true. it's shocking.
I'm not in it. There's a movie on. I'm not in it.
Yeah. Special applications to the film board without my name attached.
So how has the lockdown been? I know you're working away with your daughter Faye.
Yeah, like it's different. You kind of have to motivate yourself and get going. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of that. But then if you start doing one thing, another thing comes out of it. So it's we've been plowing away with some stuff. I'm going to be doing a film later on in the year, and there's another one in next year. Strangely enough, you'd be planning for those things very, very early on. We're looking forward to hopefully getting back on stage next year. So we're working on a new show for that.
Oh, yourself and Faye.
Well, hopefully,
right.
Faye might join me on stage if she hasn't got a movie and she moves off and does it herself and never wants to talk to me again, which might be the case after lockdown. We'd love to do something together like that. We've been working on sketches in the office and writing and filming and constantly writing. And, you know, you've got to keep sharpening up your comedy tools or whatever you want to call it. So that's what's been keeping us going.
And is there a history of father-daughter pairings in comedy? I'm trying to think.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever come across it, to be brutally honest with you. I think even father and son is probably rare enough too.
Your man does it. Jack Whitehall does it with his dad, but it's more he's sort of a sidekick than as an actual an equal partner in the process, as they call it. Yeah. So, unique enough, we
find it fun.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean it's great. I mean, she's an incredible woman, Faye. Because I don't know if I could have worked with my dad, to be honest with you. And I hope he's not listening. But she's got an amazing approach to performance and acting and everything. She was trained at it and everything else. So it's been I really enjoyed working with her because I've learned an awful lot from her focus and drive. You know, and it's. You know, it was fun actually working on Frank of Ireland because it was great to watch Brendan working with the two boys as well. I know they'd worked a few times together on various different projects.
That one, the Studs, cool. I think were both of them in Studs. Yes. Yeah.
There's a raft of projects that they were done, between Six Shooter with Martin McDonagh back in the day.
Yes. And then they did that play, didn't they? What's the name of that play?
Yes, the Wolf. Well, I can't pronounce it, but anyway,
one.
And they've done amazing work together. But it's kind of funny. I was working with Faye when I was working with the lads as well, and it's great to see that.
Mm. You've worked with Brendan loads of times before.
Yeah, I did. I was lucky enough to work on a few projects with him.
The Guard, you were in The Guard?
Yes.
Yeah.
Gosh, The Guard and what was the other John McDonagh film? It's Calvary. Yeah, And then other ones going way back to Angela Mooney Dies Again, very, very early days.
Right.
We worked together on that. You kind of nearly forget half the things. You know.
Do you ever go onto your IMDb? To look at how many things you've been in. I'm going to do that when I go home. I'm going to come on tomorrow and I'm going to go, do you know that Pat Short has been in this many films and that many TV programmes? What would you say? Well, how many movies have you been in, Pat?
Oh, God. I couldn't tell you. What 25 maybe?
What? 25 or 35?
25 to 30 maybe, I don't know.
25 to 30, like that, okay. Yeah. That's interesting now, 25 to 30, you say. And how many TV appearances do you... That's hundreds, is it?
No, just making it sound great. Well, I mean, if you take, like Father Ted, I was in two series of that, Seath. And then Killer Scully was,
of course,
35 episodes.
And
Matty, 8 or 9 or 15 or something of that. And then there's all the other.
You're in over 100 there, yeah. I'll get the official one tonight. Although some people don't go by the IMDb, it's sort of, it's not always right. But we'll do our best for that. And I'll drop you a text to let you know. Just for future reference. When Father Ted came out first, I didn't like it at all. But in the last number of years, it's so funny. Time changes also, Sean. Well, Sean, if you like it, go and watch Frank of Ireland. It's on the All Four Player thingamajig, or you can watch it like Pat does, one a week for the next few weeks.
I remember when Father Ted came out first. I like, a lot of people forget that. It was slated. And nobody liked it. And I remember my brother was teaching in England at the time, about 2 years later, after the second series was out. And he rang me one day and he said, "They've found out who I am." And I was like, "What? What are you talking about?" And all the kids in the playground realised he was my brother because we looked very alike.
All right. So that was his claim to fame.
He got dog's abuse from then on. And feck and drink and all the roles. And it's funny when the kids
to go now, Pat,
watching it.
We'll have to continue this chat off air.
Sorry.
The theatre programme is coming.
Good luck.
That's Pat Short there. Cormac and Sarah on the way. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Apologies if we're slightly late. Blame Pat Short. Whatever you're doing this evening, enjoy yourself and take care.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.